The numbers told the story. They always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Hour number two of a numbers game at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Gil Alexander, Kenley Bidlin, live from Bar Canada at the D. Paul Carr standing by to talk soccer with us. We also have Paul Sporer on the way later this hour to talk with us about Major League Baseball. Tomorrow, the Jardians girl is on, the original Jardians lady.
A.K.A. Deanna Colon.
Deanna Colon, who is just a wonderful human being, we're told. But we...
Overall great person?
Overall great person, as Kelly would say. But we really would like to big her up and make her feel good. So she's on the show tomorrow. We get tweets at Beating the Book. Brian M. Yes, Mark Cavendish. I love his frozen potato products. What is the brand again for the frozen stuff? What is it?
I have no idea.
Yeah, no, it's a joke. Folks, I guess at one point Sinner had a medical timeout, so a lot of people tweeting in about that. Where Manny Davison said played Medvedev plus 155 while Drew was on and got 16-1 for him to win it all. We're doing the tennis, boys. Well, they're still playing.
Let's do the tennis.
Medvedev.
Where's Navarro at?
Up a break.
Is she on?
She doesn't have a court to play on yet. They're only playing on the center court in court one right now, so they'll get him on. DJ Jam, Sinner thoughts during his medical break. We didn't see this because we were doing the show. Do I want to keep hitting this green fuzzy ball for the next week, or would I rather go lay up in bed for the week with the beautiful Kalinskaya, who is out of the tournament already? decisions. Oh, and then Spence has this about our Coach of the Year discussion. He says, no one is talking about Raheem Morris for Coach of the Year. The Falcons are expected to be much better and win the NFC South. It makes more sense with Cousins at quarterback than those others you guys mentioned. Well, easy about the other.
Raheem Morris definitely. He's in definitely there, alive for sure.
No, I'm just saying he said more than the others we were talking about. I don't know about more, but.
But he's a live candidate.
He's live. Yeah. The problem is that their season win total is 9.5. And again, that's the top of where your season win total really can be because there is expectations, right? It's not going to catch anybody by surprise if the Falcons win the NFC South. And in fact, if they do it, you know, at, say, 11-6. Is that really enough for Raheem Morris to win the Coach of the Year? I don't know that it is.
Yeah.
You got to win more than that, I think.
I think so. I think they'd have to be dominant in that division, but I think they can.
They can be. I think that's true. Can. So Raheem Morris absolutely deserves a mention.
Also, at some point later in the show, I think we've got to circle back to some of the Wimbledon drama, the hot goss from yesterday with Zverev after the match and Djokovic.
Oh.
Man.
Well, Zverev and Fritz, I thought, had just a nice conversation.
No, didn't he? Like he called out without calling out his girlfriend.
What?
Who we were discussing, right? What's her name? Morgan.
The influencer.
Who I definitely don't follow on Instagram.
Taylor Fritz's girl, influencer girlfriend.
Yeah. Zverev said afterward that his coach's corner was like he it was unruly or something like that.
Oh.
But it was everybody who wasn't one of his coaches. And that doesn't know tennis. So it was like clearly he was just talking about her, but didn't want to say her name.
That they were too unruly in the box.
Yes.
Oh, I didn't even know that. Wow, drama. Now, and the Medvedev and the Djokovic thing is Djokovic is really like way too sensitive.
Yeah.
He does the violin thing. They were not booing. They were chanting Rune.
Does he really not get that?
He doesn't get it. He doesn't get
After
it.
After like
he gets
20
really,
years?
He gets really offended when people start cheering for the other thing. And then when he did something, they started, you know, he didn't get it. There he is. There's your tennis hot goss, everybody. Paul Carr joins us from Topeka, Kansas, Expected Value Podcast, and, of course, True Media Networks, courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line. What's happening, Paulie?
Hey, we are down to the super business end of these tournaments, semifinals and on, so very exciting.
Can we take a listener question before you talk about the super business part?
Sure, let's do it.
Tim Lawson, The Better Life. Going to need Paul's thoughts on this week's Lamar Hunt U.S. Open Cup matches along with the Copa and Euros. Big couple days for soccer, he says. Any thoughts?
So the U.S. Open Cup is a nationwide tournament among teams from any level of soccer in the U.S. So you have your MLS teams, your USL teams, and different leagues below that. So that's going on this week. I don't have any plays on this. This is definitely one of those that you want to see the lineups to see how serious, especially the MLS teams, are taking this. Some will just roll out the reserve side for especially the early rounds. Some will take it a little more seriously. That varies a lot. This tournament should be a lot bigger. This is not necessarily betting related, but it just should be bigger because it's a giant, you know, 100-ish teams tournament, and you get Cinderella runs, you get big upsets of the second, third, fourth division teams knocking off MLS teams. But just hasn't quite figured out how to monetize and popularize it yet. Mm.
Today you have Atlanta United versus Indy 11 and the Sacramento Republic FC versus the Seattle Sounders.
Everybody knows that.
Oh. Gil, I don't have to tell you that when Sacramento Republic and Seattle Sounders collide, just throw the records
out. Throw the records out, Paul. Throw them out. Throw them out. It's a rivalry game. All right, let's start with Copa. Let's crescendo to Euros. Start with Copa. Right. You have thoughts tonight. You have thoughts tomorrow. Tonight, it's Argentina and Canada, or as Deborah Song fashion stylist native Torontonian said to me the other day, hey, is Canada in something that I should know about? what are your thoughts? Does Canada have a shot here?
I mean, they've got a shot. You always have a puncher's chance in these knockout rounds. And Canada's a defense-first team, so the question, of course, is can they keep Argentina off the scoreboard? And these two teams played in the group stage, and Canada did it for a half. They were, you know, going toe-to-toe, punch-for-punch, whatever the analogy is, with Argentina for the first half. Had the same number of shots, more expected goals. But then Argentina kind of cranked it up in the second half, and Canada wore down, and Argentina won that one 2-0. So there's a chance that happens again. I don't think it will. Argentina, their defense has been pretty good, allowed the fewest shots among knockout teams. And Canada, like I said, defense first, not a great attacking team, somewhat by design. They only have 2 goals in 4 games. That's the fewest among all the quarterfinalists. So I like Argentina to win. I like them to win to nil at minus 110. Again, some places this is like an Argentina, both teams to score no parlay. But you should be able to get close to even money on this. Argentina win to nil against Canada.
There it is. That's it for Canada, according to Paul Carr. Yep. It's over.
All right.
Tomorrow, Colombia and Uruguay. That is the other matchup in this one. And you have a Colombia future, I believe, that is still alive.
I do. Plus 1,400, still kicking. So I'm going to let that part ride, I think, for this one.
Going to let it ride. But you do have a prop play here.
Do have a prop. So this is a little bit of a fun one. Over half a red card. So there will be a red card at plus 285. Wow. These two teams. So if you saw any of the Uruguay-Brazil game, it was 0-0. Uruguay committed 26 fouls. Just clearly trying to break up the game. That's the most fouls in a game at this tournament. These two teams have committed the most fouls of any teams in the tournament. So I think it's going to be that kind of game again. And Uruguay kind of notoriously, they've got, you know, coaches have been saying, why do they have so many fouls but only 3 yellow cards in the whole tournament? And so that's out there, that narrative that, you know, the referees are hearing about. So I think it's going to be physical because, you know, these high-level South America games tend to be that way. And if you're physical, there's lots of fouls, a handful of yellows. There's got a pretty good shot of getting a red, especially late in the game when things get chippy. So give me a red card at plus 285.
Man is rooting for a red card tomorrow night, Colombia and Uruguay.
Root for violence.
No, I bet it already. That's the most fun bet we've had on the show in like a week, I feel like.
Sometimes you bet against human achievement. Sometimes you bet for human violence.
That's right. Yeah. I'm going to watch a soccer game rooting for guys to fight. That would be ideal.
That'd be a very American thing of us to do.
Yeah. On a camera on Kelly watching this game.
Come on, punch him. You're going to take that?
That was only a yellow. Come on.
All right. Euros. Now, we talked about this yesterday, that just the amazing ability of both France and England to have advanced to this semifinal. And in the case of today's game, Spain and France. By the way, is this a 12 noon Eastern tilt or 12 noon Pacific?
Pacific.
So this is, yeah, 3 p.m. Eastern, 12 noon Pacific. They switched the times up. You got Spain and France going. France is the first team ever to advance the semifinals of the Euros without scoring a goal in open play. We went through it game by game yesterday. It has been a own goal a couple times from their opponents. It's been a 1-1 draw where both were on PKs. It's been a 0-0 penalty kicks, and it was another one in penalty kicks here in the last match. So they're here against Spain. Spain may be the best team thus far, would you say, Paul?
I think it's pretty undeniable. It was Spain or Germany, and Spain beat Germany. Spain is definitely the best team we've seen, in part just because they're the only team that seems to be trying to score goals regularly, which is, you know, fairly fundamental, but not something we've seen a lot of.
You got Spain here? Is that the way you're going?
I am. I have a Spain win, plus 175. Like I said, Spain's the only team interested in attacking. France has a very clear defend-first game plan. Their coach, Didier Deschamps, was a great defender for France. And I think he takes joy in this. You see him at press conferences. He gets asked about it, and he's just, like, smiling. He loves it. So this is his style. It's defend first. It's get the ball to Mbappe and let him do his thing. But the problem is Mbappe is clearly not 100%, whether it's the broken nose, whether it's something else that's bothering him. Not really sure. So, you know, this is kind of a, you know, fool me once, shame on me, fool me four times, shame on them, or whatever it's supposed to be. I'm not going to expect France to kick it up a gear two or three until they do it. So I trust Spain more than any other team to get a goal, maybe two. I'm not convinced France can shift gears. So this is just the win in regulation plus 175 on Spain.
All right. Then tomorrow night, the Netherlands against England, Holland against England, the Dutch against England. England also, like France, just 5 points in the group stage, one win, two draws. But then in case of England, two come from behind wins against Slovakia. They get the equalizer with 5 minutes into added time, and then they get a Harry Kane header to win it. That sustained the rest of the way in the extra time. Then against Switzerland, 75th minute, Switzerland goes up 1-0. England ties it 5 minutes later, and they end up winning on PKs. And here they are against the Dutch. What do you got?
I can't bet England. I just can't. I mean, they've been so bad in this tournament with all the attacking talent that they have. They just can't muster much of anything. Nothing's connecting together, etc. So I have the Dutch to advance at plus 110. If I'm honest, I don't love the price. I wish it were a little bit better. But I just think the Dutch can beat you different ways. The Dutch weaknesses defensively are things like transition and, you know, get your runners into space, and England doesn't do either one of those things very well. So just give me the Dutch to advance at plus 110. This game, just turn it on after 2 hours when it's in penalty.
Okay, Spain to win today, Netherlands to advance tomorrow, then in Copa America, Argentina win to nil against Canada tonight, Colombia, Uruguay over a half a red card. Paul Carr, baby, solid semifinal segment. Thank you, sir.
You bet. Let's go.
At Paul Carr, C-A-R-R, on Twitter. We'll come back. How about some college football with Pete Futak? We'll take a look at the Heisman and more next.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Ladies and gentlemen, we have not talked to this gentleman since January, and it has been far too long. From collegefootballnews.com to talk college football, coincidentally, it's the great Pete Futak, everybody, courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line, right here on A Numbers Game. Peter, he's got the Flavortown poster behind him. What's happening?
What's going on, guys? How you doing? Welcome to football season as Big 12 has invaded your town today. So it's starting to get a little real here. The object's starting to come in the window kind of fast here.
Yeah, what did you want to say about Big 12 Media Day, which is going on at Circa? What did you want to say?
It's happening today. So at least this is, you know, remember last year at this time, the crazy part about the Big 12 Media Days is last year, the big talk was about, oh, they got these four new teams coming in and Oklahoma and Texas are leaving. And Pac-12 Media Days are coming up next. And, you know, maybe the Big 12 will expand to maybe UConn. And, you know, maybe the Pac-12 should look at a San Diego State and the UNLV. And then, so, I mean, it's amazing how soon this was. But it was less than a year ago that we still thought the Pac-12 was going to be a thing. And the Big 12 was just going to kind of try to figure it all out still.
Are you excited for the new look of college football?
Yeah, only because it's going to – well, first of all, the anti part of this is it's going to be too long, is that the national championship's at the end of January, and that's too deep into the NFL playoffs, and it's just going to – the playoff is going to be awesome. I think we're all kind of underestimating just how much this will take over December, but I think it'll drag out a little bit long. But on the flip side of this, it's going to be a whole lot of fun. Overarching theme here is that – more teams are going to be involved. It's just going to bring in, instead of four teams, if you lose two games early, you're out for the year. Now, 12 teams in, it's going to include like 40 fan bases are still going to be caring about college football in mid-November. So it's just going to make for kind of a wilder season than normal.
Give me the Peter Futak prediction of the most random team that will make the 12-team playoff.
Unfortunately, the most Peter Futak way I'm going to be really annoying about this and say it's going to be the thing to remember is that the crazy part about going forward is if you win your Power Four conference championship, you're in. So you're not going to have any more Purdue's or, you know, outlier programs getting in because there's no divisions anymore. So you're going to have to be really, really good to get in. But think about it this way. If you go 9-3, for example, and you have kind of a meh year and you're going against a superpower, if you pull off the upset in the conference championship, then you're in the college football playoff and you're probably getting a top four seed. So you talk about the randomness of this. Anybody you want to name in the Big 12, from top in Utah, Arizona, or Oklahoma State and Kansas State are probably the four best teams in the Pac and the Big 12. But from top to bottom, it is a pretty tight conference. So if you want to say like TCU, for example, look at their schedule again. Bad year last year. They come back pretty strong. Baylor has a really nice schedule. If a Baylor goes like 9-3 and they somehow sneak in and they pull off what wouldn't be that massive an upset over whoever's in there, they're the four seed in the college football playoffs. So if you have a real hot thing for any team that's like in the Big 12 this year, not too crazy to throw it in there.
All right. That qualifies as a good answer to that question. By the way, the Flavortown thing, does the wife let you have that up year round? She's okay with that?
It's my house. I do what I want to in this town.
I'm sorry for the question. My God.
As
long as she's not listening, he says that like that. Okay. And then this is similar to that question, but give me the most random Pete Futak opinion of the year, the most unconventional opinion, maybe about a team, maybe about something else.
I'll go two routes on this. One, we're going to have some laughs and kill some time. We'll talk a lot of college football because betting is what we're talking about here. And it doesn't matter how good or bad you are. It's all about the betting. We're just killing time until it's Ohio State, Georgia. It's like last year, you kind of knew Michigan was it. That was their year, their team. Ohio State and Georgia are so much better than everybody else this year. It's going to have to take something freakish. Again, we don't know how things are going to kind of play out in the expanded college football playoff, where whether or not players are going to get NFL-itis and want to start leaving, or you know, injuries, obviously. But those two are just by far, in a way, the best two. And then the outlier to that's kind of the opposite of this. I think reality is going to come to breakfast for Texas and Oregon. And they're really good, but they're not playing the schedules they had last year. So if you're at Texas, you're not playing, you know, Iowa State, not the conference champ, but you're not playing, you know, Cincinnati and Iowa State this year. You're in an SEC world. And we know if we go by the college football playoff of the past 10 years, how they ranked teams, you have to go 10-2. Don't bother knocking on the door if you're not 10-2. You're not going to get in the top 11, which is where you're going to have to beat. That 12th team is probably going to be that group of five program, where I do think Texas isn't going to be as good as everyone thinks. I don't think Oregon's good. Oregon's really good, but they've got some nasty games on that schedule, including Ohio State. I think at least one of those two teams will go 9-3 and not make the playoff.
And Alabama, real quick, let me just throw that in. The first year after the Nick Saban era, they do they meet expectation.
Yeah, if depending if you're saying that they're not going to be the 11-1, 12-0 yearly juggernaut of the Nick Saban era, but they're still going to be very good. They're going to be a whole lot of fun. And that's one of those teams where they really are 10-2, 9-3. If you look at their schedule, it's very tough. There are three losable games on that schedule, but I think there's still Alabama. You still got to look out for them. And now when you put, I see the odds to win the college football national championship here. Remember, as we always talk about when it came to the playoff, there's a difference between getting in it and winning it, where Alabama can absolutely get into the college football playoff. I don't think they're going to have enough juice to actually get through this tournament and win it. Because right now, if you're going anybody but Georgia or Ohio State, it's kind of, you're kind of taking the guesser and outlier. I know the odds are better that way, but getting in, it's one thing. Actually getting through this three or four game schedule is going to be harder.
All right. And by the way, for those not watching, Georgia and Ohio State are the short shots, plus 320 and 4-1 respectively. Texas and Oregon, who Pete said reality would come to breakfast, I believe was the exact quote for. Texas plus
family show. I'm keeping it light here. Yeah.
Texas plus 750, Oregon plus 850 to win it all. And then Bama, fifth at 14-1.
Ohio State at plus 400 is actually pretty sweet. Ohio State's actually the number one team coming into the season talent-wise. Georgia's going to get a lot of love because of Georgia. Ohio State, if Ryan Day doesn't beat Michigan this year, they're going to get to the college football playoff no matter what. They don't play anybody in non-conference play. But this team, they basically bought themselves every single good player, and that's not you can actually say that now without getting in trouble because that's what you do. But Ohio State, they just got everybody this year.
Favorite season win total, over, under, or both?
Notre Dame, anybody who's got a 10.5 next to their names, except for Georgia and Ohio State and Liberty, actually, I go the under because it doesn't take much to do that. Like, let's say you're Notre Dame and you've got a pretty light schedule all the way around. 10.5 is a little rich because you got to start the season at Texas A&M. That's at best a 50-50 game. You still get Florida State at home. That's a 50-50 game. I think that the season ender at USC is going to be tough, especially if USC desperately needs that game for, you know, Lincoln Riley's job, if there's if things go according to maybe plan with that schedule. And there's always the random outlier game. Like last year, look at Notre Dame's team, really, really good. They lost the two big games on the road. And then the game at home to Ohio State. Well, they could certainly lose to USC and Texas A&M and lose the Florida State game or something outlier there. So you're talking, all you got to lose is two games to get to that under on 10.5. I think Notre Dame's very good. I think they're definitely going to get in the college football playoff. But I think 10 is more likely than 11.
All right. And finally, the Heisman Trophy, sir.
I always say it's my boring answer to you in the 56th year I've been on your show is always take the field. More than ever this year, because of the new college football playoff, you're going to have different teams and different levels. Jaden Daniels certainly was not part of that this year, but for the main guy on that list here, Jalen Milroe, because remember what Kalen DeBoer did at Fresno State first when he took over there and how that offense just absolutely blew up. He goes up to Washington and all of a sudden Michael Penix Jr. becomes this superstar and they just dominate statistically. Same thing in Alabama, which I think is getting kind of lost, is welcome to Air Alabama, where Milroe, who I actually thought deserved a lot more Heisman love last year, if not win it, what should it be? Are you the MVP? He came up with a signature play of the season in that throw against Auburn to get Alabama into the SEC championship. He came up with a win over number one Georgia with a great performance. He was better than the guy who won the Heisman when it came down to it. I think Milroe, if you combine all that he can do with the Alabama-ness of being Alabama, with the stats he's going to put up, because if this works like it's supposed to, he's throwing for a gajillion yards and the stats will be there. I think he's kind of a step above everyone else right now.
I'll put you on the spot here in our last 30 seconds because we just showed that whole Heisman board. Every single person is a quarterback there. If I came to you from the future and I said a non-quarterback won this, who would it be?
I can't get there because no run. It's you got to run for like 2,200 yards and come up with a gajillion touchdowns. It's going to be so hard for anyone. There's no defensive player out there who's standing right now. No wide receiver. So if I would say Quinshon Judkins of Ohio State, maybe because he's going to get the ball out and he's going to score 25 touchdowns. But it's going to be a quarterback.
Carson Beck, your short shot at 8-1 from Georgia. Dylan Gabriel at Oregon at +850. Quinn Ewers at Texas +950. Those are the only folks in single digits. Jalen Milroe leads the double-digit parade. Peter, great talking to you. We'll talk soon. Thank you.
Gil, later.
At Pete Futak, FIUTAK on Twitter.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Don't forget, tomorrow on the show, Deanna Cologne from the Jardians commercials. Hey, check out our website, JVT at VSiN.com on the front page, talking about NBA Summer League, which begins this week. Pumped?
Friday.
You pumped for Summer League?
I will be more pumped when I know for sure I'm going.
Okay. All right. Nigel Seeley on Euro 2024, his semifinal thoughts. Tyler Shoemaker on the WNBA. Zach Cohen with his Wimbledon picks. And Steve Mackinnon, MLB bullpen betting system update for the week of July 7th. This week, it's all at vsin.com. Best bets, betting splits, exclusive articles, odds by state, betting tools, and betting guides. Check it out. Gil Alexander, Kelly Bidlin. We got the Jardines girl on tomorrow. Jardines a lady.
Boom, look at that.
Oh, Sigma live shot.
Derby, the deep clean.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is rare footage.
This is the keeper of the derby right here.
Yeah, if you are watching us right now, this is a meticulous cleaning of Sigma Derby. In fact, I'm not sure we're not going to get in trouble for showing this because this is highly confident.
That is cleaning.
If you come close to him, what happened to you when you tried to take a picture? He wouldn't let you?
Sort of.
Took it down. See, we had to take it down.
Sort of.
No.
I did that thing, though, where I asked. I should have just probably snapped one. I don't think they would have cared.
Yeah,
you would have enjoyed me, Matt Brown and myself. What was it, Friday night at the Palms? And there's a Yacht Rock band that was playing over there. We were at the Palms anyways, and we were like, let's go check this out. It's like $30 or whatever.
Uh-huh.
We may have had a few drinks in us, though,
sure.
And we missed the start time of it. So I was like, let's just see how far we can talk our way through, like, to get in, right?
Yeah.
And like there, we walk up and there's nobody asking for tickets. And I'm like, oh, this is great. So we go through security this whole
time. Is it a known Yacht Rock band or is it just some rando yacht?
No, it was a Yacht Rock cover band.
Oh, okay.
I forget what they're called.
Right.
Yachtly Crew. Yachtly Crew. That's what
of course they're called.
They were great. They were great, actually. We get up there. We get through security. And like Matt's like, is this actually going to work? I'm like, I don't, nobody's stopping us. And then we go to walk in. And right at the last door, this guy's like, hey, you guys got tickets? And I'm like, I just like froze. And he's like, did you perchance have tickets and then you left and are coming back? And I'm like, yes, that's what we did.
Oh, he
so
did
the guy
that
just
for
kinda
you.
Let us
that's
in,
awesome. That's great. Good for him. Good for you. Did you? So then once you get in, are you and Matt Brown sort of uncomfortable with each other watching Yachtly Crew together?
I had a great time.
Okay.
A great time.
All right. Ladies and gentlemen, this is a man who appreciates Yacht Rock and has been subjected to not only on-air music commentary between me and Kelly, but also off-air as well. 5 good minutes of it. It's Paul Sporer, everybody, at Sporer on Twitter, courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line. He works at Fangraphs, the baseball analytics Bible, if you will. Sleeper in the Bus, the name of the podcast. What's happening, Paulie?
Not too much. How you guys doing?
Doing very well. Anything to add? The Yacht Rock, or would you like to pass on this subject?
I mean, I like some of it, but, you know, I don't hurt anybody's feelings. So.
Oh, man.
You know, anything nice to say, don't say anything at all. Right?
Wow. I think he was about to hurt mine. Yacht Rock is phenomenal. Hey, come on.
I like the Doobie Brothers. They're considered Yacht Rock, I believe. My dad listened to a lot of music of those eras that I'm very, very accustomed to. So, yeah. I like some. I think Michael McDonald is considered Yacht Rock there.
McDonald solo is, but old Doobies,
I think that
is
brings
like
in the Doobies.
Yeah, well, no, because the old Doobies is like Southern rock. That's different. It's a whole different thing. They were like two bands,
right.
Two different eras.
You have to break down all the genres
for me. Yeah, I could do it for you. Okay, I can tell you're very interested. Let's start with DFS, Paulie. What do you got today?
Kind of a deep pitching board. I mean, lots of ways to go. Definitely some landmines out there. But, you know, I love Bailey Ober. He gets the White Sox. That's a team that shouldn't be able to take advantage of his biggest issue, which is the home run issue. You got Zach Gallen. Both those guys, I'm a DraftKings guy, so I like the two pitchers. Both those guys coming in under 9,000. The 9,000 and up crew isn't bad. Sale, Blanco, Gilbert, Scherzer, and Irvin. But I'm thinking I'm going Gallen Ober at those price points there. And as far as spots that I'm trying to pick on some pitchers, I think we're looking at Astros against Trevor Rogers, maybe some Rangers against Ronzi Contreras. I'm not quite sold on Quinn Priester with Pittsburgh. Milwaukee's been putting up numbers on a lot of teams there. And then Adam Mazur. Now, usually we're going against Seattle on things, and maybe he'll get some strikeouts, but he hasn't really shown me enough that I might not throw a couple Mariners into the lineup there. So lots of options today. We're not in Coors. They are in Cincinnati, though, and that's a nice hitting haven. So plenty of options there, too.
I'm going to do something that is very poor form. I'm going to go back to an appearance you made on the show in late May, and I asked you about division exactas. And I want to give you an opportunity here a week before the All-Star break, a week plus before the All-Star. No, not a week plus. Literally less than a week before the All-Star break.
Literally a week.
Yeah.
That is the All-Star game.
That's correct. All right, let's do a division by division. American League East, I believe you went Orioles-Yankees at the time, didn't you not? That's looking pretty good. You stick with that?
Yeah, I think I'm going to stick there. I'm not too worried about the Yankees having a lull. I mean, God, that fan base. They have a couple bad weeks, and the sky is just falling for those freaks. I'm not too worried about it. That's still a really good team. They'll be okay.
I co-sign. I'm on a text chain with Will Hill and Felica every day. Yeah, just everything you hate about Yankees fans. Oh,
exactly.
I miss the days when we just bought all of our players and crushed everybody. It's like
we can't keep a 750 win percentage going.
Oh, Jesus.
Shut up.
Like, shut your pie holes already. Oh, sorry, guys, if you're listening. All right, American League Central, you said, that's one I think you want back. I think you said Royals Tigers. Did you say that? I think you did. Yeah.
You don't have any proof that I said
that. Yeah, no, I'll show the video. Yeah, Royals Tigers. I don't think you like that one, do you?
No. Okay. You know, my Tigers have not really taken advantage of anything. I think they still pitch pretty well. Keeter Montero last night with a good outing against Cleveland. Excuse me. They have 1-4. They are in a period. If I could just back my Tigers for a second, I am off them, even as a dark horse. But if I could just give them some love for a quick second, if they can play well here for the rest of this weekend, coming out of the break, they can put themselves in position. It's a very, very difficult set schedule with Cleveland a bunch of times. By the way, they play Cleveland 10 times this month. The Twins, the Dodgers, like there's a lot of great teams in there that if they can play well, they can get themselves in. KC, I'm not out on. I still think that they're really interesting. They need to figure out a way to play better on the road. But that Minnesota and Guardians twosome at the top there is looking, they are looking like the class of the division. The Royals need to make sure they don't fall too far behind, because you also don't want some of those teams to start coming up on the wild card and maybe putting them out too. They need to get better on the road, 18 and 25 for the Royals there. If I'm going with it right now, I'm probably going to go with the two top ones, the Guards and Twins. I'm not sure it's going to be that order, though. I still think this Twins team is pretty good. Of course, Royce Lewis gets hurt again. They're going to need some guys to step up for them. Miranda's done a great job doing it, but they're going to need like a Matt Wallner or Trevor Larnach, somebody else to kind of pick up some of that slack while Lewis is out again. And he just unfortunately can't be relied upon. He's a brilliant player, but his body just simply does not cooperate.
Yeah, American League East, Orioles up 3 on the Yankees currently. Red Sox are 4.5 behind the Yankees. And then the Central, Guardians, 5-game lead over the Twins. Royals 3.5 behind them. The Tigers 9 behind the Twins in that division. And again, these are bettable on and off at different sportsbooks. They'll throw these exactas up and they'll take them down at different times. American League West, the Mariners have a 2-game lead over the Astros and a 5.5-game lead over the Rangers. You said Astros-Rangers. Do you stick with that?
Yeah, I do. I still like this Mariners team, but they can't hit. They also have some struggles on the road. And if they don't figure out something with the hitting, I'm just not sure that they're going to have enough pitching to do it. And I do think both those Texas teams can get them. Texas on a win 4, they need to really kind of keep that momentum going themselves. Houston, I feel much more confident in. I did kind of talk up both Texas clubs, including the Rangers, quite a bit. But as it stands right now, you know, a couple weeks after that discussion, I definitely feel better about the Astros. Things are really going in the right direction for them. Whereas, again, the Rangers are on a nice little win 4 right now, but they still haven't really quite put it together. They need a nice big run where they go, like, I don't know, what is it, say like 15-5 over a 20-game stretch. Something like that needs to kind of really put Texas back in it, but I'm not giving up on them right now.
All right, rapid fire on the NL. You said Braves, Phillies in that order. Braves are 7.5 back.
Yeah, I'm not getting there with the Braves.
No.
They're running a half lineup right now. The top half is good. They've got some good pitching, but the Phillies are just really, really strong, and they're going to go out and get reinforcements too. We know that that's going to be something that they do. So flip it, Phillies, Braves.
NL Central, I kind of egged you on into this. Cubs, Brewers, that would be worst of first if it happened now.
I took the Cubs.
Yeah, because at the end, you're like, I kind of like yours. I kind of like Cubs, Brewers.
Oh. Gross. Why did I do that?
I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I still like the Brewers. I don't know what has happened to that Cubs team. I expected some regression from a couple pieces of it. You know, Imanaga, I didn't think was going to be an ace all year. But yeah, they're bizarre. They're not dead. I know it's crazy, but they're not dead. But no, of course, I'm not going to go with them. I'll go Brewers. It's probably going to be the Brewers cards that we see right now. I still can't quit the Pirates, though. They're running, you know, they have a bona fide ace with Skeens. Keller's been pitching very, very well and makes up for the fact that Jared Jones is out. Hopefully it's not a big deal with Jones, because then they run a really strong 1-2-3. They would need to find some hitting, but we got to go Brewers cards right now. You just can't trust Pirates, Reds, or Cubs.
And then the West, you went Dodgers, Diamondbacks.
I'm fine with that. Like, I still like the Padres, and they're the ones that are in second place right now.
Yeah.
Diamondbacks and Rangers are both kind of lying in wait. Both clubs are solid.
Not mentioned. The San Francisco Giants. I didn't hear that come out.
I never mentioned them. No, you know that.
I never do. Thank you, Paul. Enjoy. Sorry to bring that up, but you nailed the Orioles-Yankees, that's for sure, that one.
Yeah. Hey, that's fine. I live and die with the wins and the losses, so I don't mind you bringing up some of the ugly ones.
And the AL West may hit, and the NL West might hit. You might get half of these. Appreciate it. Paul Spore, everybody, at Spore on Twitter. We'll come back. We'll wrap things up. It's a numbers game at VSiN, the sports betting.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Back on a numbers game, live at Bar Canada here at the D. Gil Alexander. Kelly Bidlin hanging on a Wednesday in the middle of July. Not quite the middle, but you know, you get it. You get the idea. Tennis update. Daniil Medvedev wins a third set tiebreaker against Jannik Sinner. Up 2-1, but Sinner applying pressure to try to break. In fact, he has 3 break points coming up against Medvedev in the fourth game of the fourth set. So this could be kind of levelish momentarily if Sinner can, in fact, pull off the Oh, no, Sinner already has the break. Pardon me. Again, just watching this off the screen. So Sinner's already up a break. So this is looking like it will be even, at least at this point, after the fourth set and headed to a fifth if this continues. And then in the first set, on serve with Carlitos and Tommy Paul right now, 5-4 in favor of the American right now, Tommy Paul, in the other men's quarter that is taking place right now. That's your tennis update. Again, women's this morning, Donna Vekic advanced to the semifinals against Lulu Sun. And later today, after one of these is finished, I can't remember which court they're on, but Emma Navarro will take on Jasmine Paolini. I have Navarro minus 2.5 games. Drew said earlier on the show he is on Paolini. So
yep.
There you go. We are oppo.
I'm with you. I laid the 2.5.
Okay. All right.
Let's go, Emma.
Let's go, Emma.
She is ripped.
Emma Navarro?
Yeah.
She's not Maria Sakkari ripped.
Yeah, I don't know. She looks like she lives in the gym, though.
Oh, yeah. I just want to bring up this point because a couple of people have chimed in on Twitter. We mentioned earlier this week that Emma Navarro is a heir to a billionaire. Her father is a billionaire worth $1.5 billion, businessman.
Chump change.
I think his company owns, like, Chevron. What did we say they owned? What was it? Like, not Chevron.
It wasn't Chevron.
we were surprised it was only $1.5 billion.
Yeah, because it was a bank. It was some kind of bank.
Her dad, Ben Navarro,
owned some financial company that part of their portfolio was, like, Capital One Bank or something like that.
Ben Navarro owns... Right. He is an American billionaire. He owns, he's the CEO of Sherman Financial Group, which owns Credit One Bank.
Credit One.
There
you
go. And then Jesse Pegula, her father is worth $7 billion. He owns the Buffalo Bills and the Buffalo Sabres, just to give you an idea what that's about. So, you know, we're talking about it, but I just want to make clear again, I hate, like, the notion of people who are like, oh, they have all the money in the world. And they have all the advantages. They get coaches and, you know, probably at a country club or whatever. They still became like a Jesse Pegula ended up being a top five player in the world. And Emma Navarro was top 20. That's still unbelievable no matter how much of an advantage you have.
Yeah.
It's incredible.
It's funny, though.
You still don't get credit.
No, I do, too. Totally. I think you're right. We probably make too many jokes and too much light of it.
Bro, because it's amazing.
To get to this level, it's kind of like...
It's
not the same thing, but like Djokovic, this is like I've kept asking about Djokovic, right? The knee thing, and it's like I was thinking about this yesterday, where nobody wants to give the guy is so good that we can't give him any credit for making it to the second week of a Grand Slam on a bum knee. Everybody's like, oh, he hasn't really played anybody yet. It's like that's the best tennis players in the world.
I'll say it again. These. Djokovic and Nadal and Federer are better at tennis than anyone in the world is at anything.
Yeah, incredible.
And I will just say these top-ranked tennis players, Pegula and Navarro deserve all the credit in the world because there's so many people who have like country club advantages and stuff. The coaches, they don't even sniff being pro.
Well, while we're country clubbing, did you catch the golf news yesterday that shook up the golf world a bit?
You're talking about Keegan Bradley? Okay, you mentioned this as we left. So what Kelly's referring to is Keegan Bradley was named the coach of captain of the U.S. Ryder Cup team. He was cut last year from even participating, right?
Yes, Zach Johnson. Did not get selected as a captain's pick by Zach Johnson.
Selected by Zach Johnson. Thank you.
Which was very controversial.
So you're amazed by this because it's coming off that controversy or because you expected it to be Tiger Woods?
Oh, there's a lot of... I mean, everybody thought it would be Tiger, but it just doesn't follow, like, the old Ryder Cup formula of who should be captain and it should be someone who's earned more on the tour and is a little older and yada, yada, yada. I love it. Keegan, if you've ever listened to that guy talk in any interview ever, he loves the Ryder Cup. Everybody's going back to the whole Netflix series and him getting upset about not being selected and everything. Just shows how much he cares. He is someone I've been lucky enough to talk to in person a couple times. The biggest takeaway you'll ever come away with from interviewing Keegan Bradley is the dude loves sports. He would rather talk to you about the Patriots and the NFL more so than the golf course. So when we're talking a team golf event like the Ryder Cup, he's kind of the perfect guy for it. So
who's the burn on here that you were so amazed by? Like, why was this so?
Just he was a surprise. He was surprised. Combined with not being on the team 4 years ago, there are other guys that theoretically could have been selected ahead of him that would have fit the formula a little bit more.
The other thing we talked about earlier this week that we sort of glossed over, and I believe the words came out of my mouth. All of you NBA Defensive Player of the Year award voters who didn't vote for him, go to hell, I believe is what I said, if I'm quoting myself exactly. And I really mean that. I don't think I've said that about anybody. But people that refused to vote for Victor Wembanyama for Defensive Player of the Year this past year, who are going to unabashedly do it next year and for the 10 years after that, I have a special place for y'all. And it's just, it's in awards betting, what's the opposite of the Hall of Fame? Whatever that is.
Yeah,
that's what you deserve. Victor Wembanyama, minus 250 for Defensive Player of the Year. Those are the early returns. I think it was minus 225. It's already minus 250. And the question becomes, do you just bet it now and forget about it? Do you wait and pray that somehow this is a poor start to the season? You get a better price? I don't think you do that. I'll just answer my question right there. What do you do with this? Do you just bet it now?
I think it's an annoyingly perfect number by the books.
Oh, of course it is.
Like it's.
But it's what it should have been at the end of the year, too.
It's kind of egregious to bet that now this far. I mean, the season hasn't even started. Minus 250 on almost anyone.
All it takes is an injury.
Yeah. All that. But at the same, I mean, we were talking about it a bit after the show yesterday. Like, there are, my brain's in two places on this. I thought it was going to be an auto bet for me. So, like, the idea of rolling into the season without that ticket, it kind of hurts my brain, but also, like, I don't think I can bet him at minus 250 right now to win that award.
Yeah, and then when it's minus 2,000, you know,
you're going to feel like an idiot
2 weeks into November.
Yeah, I could feel like a massive idiot.
I did bet.
It's very tough. I mean, we have him MVP. You have him MVP, right?
For next year?
Yeah.
I haven't bet it yet,
I've got him MVP. So I do have that.
What's Brian Windhorst like? Brian Windhorst is no ceiling for him. No ceiling for Victor Wembanyama. Well, I wish you guys had felt that way this past year.
I have a bigger problem. Like, while we're on that, though, I know I brought this up at the time, but like the principle of it, of awards, when we talk about betting, awards betting, right? We've spent a lot of time, you know, talking about the cautions and everything of this that goes into betting awards. But I kind of have a bigger problem with the guys who did like go on the air and be like, you know what, I'm changing my mind. It was ridiculous. Like a week after they submitted their ballots.
Perks did that.
But there were multiple. It was Perkins and others. Like, I have a bigger problem with if you put that little thought into your initial vote.
Oh, I hate you so much. It's not even funny.
Like, I'd rather just don't bring it up again. Just shut up and go away. Don't bring it up.
Of all of the, I think we will, like, years from now when we go back, what was your worst award beat of all time? I'm not sure beat is the right word, but I think the one where you got wronged the most, that will always clearly be the answer for everybody who had Wembanyama. I did bet offensive.
Man, I think it's two in the same year.
Or DeMar Hamlin.
Hamlin's worse.
Or DeMar Hamlin.
I think Hamlin's worse.
You're right. It was the year of ridiculousness.
Or at least Joe Flacco winning that is worse. Is the worst result of both
so
of
bad.
Those.
It's so bad. I did make a bet. I mentioned this briefly yesterday, too. I did make a bet for Offensive Player of the Year in the NFL. That is my first awards bet that I've made this year. 32-1 on Puka Nacua of the Rams. The thinking there being, you know me, I cried and moaned about the fact that Nacua, who I had an Offensive Rookie of the Year, 25-1 this past year, not that he didn't win. C.J. Stroud absolutely deserved to win, and Puka was the obvious second-place person. But what I was screaming about was with, you know, Sean McVay and Matt Stafford. I believe the phrase I use is Matt Stafford obsessed with his podcast partner and boyfriend, Cooper Kupp, that they just kept feeding the ball to Cooper Kupp no matter what. It's like, why don't you just keep throwing it to Puka and you'll win all these games? But they just refused to do that, and I feel like now they get it. I feel like Cooper Kupp's a little more banged up than he was, right? Like, I just think he's getting older fast. And the other part of this is if something happens to Matthew Stafford, dare I say Jimmy G is a competent backup that I like having there as a safety net?
Yeah, no, that's a good point, yeah.
So I thought Puka 32-1 was a long shot number, good enough to bet. Tyreek Hill, by the way, is the short shot here at 7-1. Christian McCaffrey plus 750. CeeDee Lamb, the only other person in single digits, at 9-1. But I made the bet on Puka. We've done all we can do. Gojo and Golic are next. Best bets on the TV side. It's a numbers game at VSiN, the sports betting network.